A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it is me, Ellie Gibson. I'm still working on new ways to make that more interesting after 256 times, and I'm struggling, team. I am struggling. Maybe someone could write in.
Oh.
Bonjour. moi.
This is like, no? This is like when like Madonna or Kylie reinvents himself after like 20 years and like, oh, I'm going to do rap now. I'm going to do, you know, you're trying to break. Oh, no, I like it. It's good. Anyway, we've got a guest,
that works so well for both of them.
Yes.
And yes, we do have a guest.
She's patiently waiting between us. It is, of course, the fabulous, the very famous, very talented and highly skilled guest, Dr. Zoe Williams. Hello.
I'm not sure that any of those things are true, but I'll take it.
You are a doctor.
I'll be more Ellie. Yes.
You are literally a doctor.
No, that is true.
And a medical doctor, not like Dr. Fox or something like that. You're an actual
medical
doctor.
I do have a medical degree and I do see patients as a GP as a job. So, yeah, that's all right.
And do you get annoyed? Is it annoying when you're in a situation like this or at a dinner party where you meet new people and they just want to ask you medical questions?
I don't find it annoying, but I have to be careful because there are certain medical questions that are okay to ask sort of flippantly, and there are other medical questions that actually, without your full medical record, it can almost be dangerous. And if I'm on holiday with the girls on a hen do or something like that, I have a rule that they can't ask me a medical question until I've had at least 2 cups of coffee, and it has to.
I thought you'd say at least 2 margaritas.
Yeah,
I throw caution to the wind.
No, they can't ask me a medical question until I've had at least 2 cups of coffee and before I've had an alcoholic beverage. So it's about a 20-minute window usually on holiday.
Yeah.
So clinic is open, clinic is shut.
I love it. Helen has a medical question, obviously. What's
yes,
yours?
It's been on my mind, and I've actually gone to see a doctor about this. Why do my farts smell so bad? Why?
To be clear, you think that there's something wrong with you.
Yes, I do think there's. I went to the doctor and I said, a fart can't smell this bad. Like there is something medically. And the doctor just said, oh, you probably eat too many lentils. And I don't eat that many lentils. But anyway,
describe it.
Oh, it's all like. Oh, Ellie should, because she's the victim.
Is it earthy? Is it eggy?
Imagine a dog died and then it was kept in the boot of a car inside a wet towel with 12 eggs for about 3 months.
Right.
It is quite eggy.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we all have, you've heard that term gut microbiome, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the trillions of good bugs that live inside mostly our large bowel. And when we feed them fibre, they produce methane as a byproduct of that. So really, because we all have such a unique microbiome that's unique to us, that's why our farts can smell so different.
Mm.
So it's not particularly...
Oh, it's like a fingerprint. It's your unique... Yeah. It's your signature smell, Helen. It's your signature smell.
Finger stink. Oh, it's awful. Yes.
But, you know, if farts are really, really, really offensive, then it probably is worth just getting it checked out, just send off a stool sample to check there's nothing nasty growing in there. But actually, if this has just always been the way your farts are and you're healthy and you don't have any other symptoms, then it's just you've just got a smelly microbiome.
Smelly ass.
But now I'm paranoid because my farts don't smell.
Mine don't.
Well, this is it. Does that mean we're not eating enough fibre, Zoe?
No, not necessarily. It just means the bugs that
people
have colonised you are not
better.
So smelly.
Just better.
But we do fart. I think this is the thing, right? Some people don't fart in front of their partners and hold it in.
Yeah.
And some people say they don't fart, which is just a lie. And if you fart so infrequently that you think you don't fart, then probably you're not eating enough fibre, because
right.
those healthy gut bugs should be producing some gases.
Mm. Excellent. Well, thanks very much for coming. It's been lovely to have you. That's really all we wanted to know. It's lovely to have you because you've got a book out, Zoe. Yay! Unbelievably. What's it called? What's it about?
So it's called You Grow Girl, and it's a growing up guide, so a puberty book plus for girls age 9+. It's essentially the book I wish I'd had growing up. It's really honest, but also quite reassuring, and I think the main aims are to inform girls but also to build confidence and support their self-esteem, like in a world growing up with social media and filters and all of that sort of thing, give them the tools and activities and tips that they can have confidence in themselves and in their true selves and grow up to be the best version of themselves.
It's absolutely excellent. And I must say, like, when I was growing up, especially because I grew up in like bumblefuck country Australia, there wasn't a lot of, you know, honest, fun, frank information about.
Yeah.
You know, the books were very medicalised. It was like, you will get your period and your boobs will grow and there will be hair in these parts and that's it, you know, and then hide it all away.
Yeah.
And there's so much shame and embarrassment, you know, all those changes were, you know, it was such an assault on you, you know, where I felt, and especially, you know, growing up, being sporty, then all of a sudden you couldn't go swimming because you had your period and all sorts of, you know, everything felt like an inconvenience rather than something to be celebrated.
Yeah.
And so this book, you know, it's such a joy, and I can't wait to share it with my daughter and my son, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I've shown it to some of my friends, and most of them have said, wow, I didn't know that, and I didn't know that. And actually, I would have to say, researching it and writing it, I actually learned a thing or two myself, especially the stuff around self-esteem. And what I found is that what I'm trying to promote here and encourage girls to do, I need to do a bit of this myself as well. So I think it's actually helped me. It's been quite cathartic.
Can I ask how old you are, Zoe?
I'm 43.
43. So I'm 45, right? So we're in a similar bracket. And to be honest, if I had to sit down and write a book like this, I'd be absolutely terrified. Not only because I'm not a doctor and I don't know anything, which immediately disqualifies me from the task. But I just feel like I've got two boys, but even with them, I'm really struggling to navigate stuff that I never had to deal with.
Yeah.
So when I was a teenager, it was really hard and really confusing, but my sex education wasn't bad. The school didn't do a terrible job. I was quite lucky. And like, there were things like Just 17 that told you I can get pregnant from fingering and all that sort of thing.
Position of the Fortnight. Well, it was Cosmopolitan. Oh, that
was more,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, was it
more magazine? Yeah. So there's all that. But now, you know, social media, but also like pornography. Like my son goes to a boys' school, and that's already a thing that they're aware of and they talk about. And let's be honest, they're gonna see one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the 80s, it was all right. You found a jazz mag in the woods now and again. It was just a lady with a massive bush having a nice time. It wasn't all fisting and hair pulling like it is these days. And I don't know, or maybe it didn't bother you. Did it bother you when you sat down to it? Well, how am I going to, there's all this stuff and all this medical information, but how am I going to deal with all this shit that I didn't even experience as a teenager?
Well, it was really tough. So, I mean, I talk about pornography in the book, and I think my ethos on it is, if a child is old enough to start asking these types of questions, then they're old enough to be told the truth, because they're going to go out and find this information. With my editor, there were certain things, because this book is for really designed for girls between the ages of 9 and 15, 9 and 13 mostly. Well, what you would write for a 13-year-old is very different for a 9-year-old. So we talked about things like pornography and self-pleasure, and do we put them in the book? And we decided that we do. We put it all in the book, you know, and we caveat it with, you might think that you're not ready to read this bit yet, it's here for you to come back to. But with the pornography bit, you know, I remember when I was at school, secondary school, and there was this one boy in our class whose parents lived round the corner and went out to work, and somebody managed to get hold of a VHS porn tape.
Yep. Oh, God, so it wasn't of his parents, was it?
That would be awkward. So we'd all go around to his house at lunchtime and watch this same, like, 5-minute snippet of porn, like, over and over again. But obviously children now, they can just, if they've got access to the internet, they can access it. So the book tackles that by just saying, you know, you may get exposed to this, you may choose to watch it, it might, you know, if somebody forces you to watch it, that comes into sexual abuse. And we talk about all that as well in slightly different section that's right next to it. But I just say, look, this is what you'll see. We've already talked about vulvas and how they're all different. You'll see one particular type of vulva. You'll see a particular type of penis, which is larger than most. Having sex, but not in the way that normal human beings do. So, you know, if you do, I think the wording at the end is, so if you do see it, just bear all this stuff in mind that it's not real.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an honest way of not making them want to go and search it out or look for it, but if they do, which inevitably for a lot of them at some point they will, they know that, okay, this is make-believe, this is not real.
Yeah, that's what I'm really frightened about. Not so much them seeing a bit of tits and even a bit of it going in and out, because like you said, we're all seeing that when we were children, when we're not perverts or sex molesters, at least not a lot of us. What's a sex molester?
I don't know.
Sex molesters.
I'm always learning things from you, Ellie.
Are you a sex molester? Get help now. But I hear from a lot of, especially my younger friends and women on the dating scene, that, you know, there's this generation of men that already have grown up thinking that sex is about something, and it's about the woman looking uncomfortable or being slapped in the face, or, you know, and it's about, and they, the men sometimes say themselves they're confused and they're addicted to porn and they're, I just don't know.
I think it's a good reason why it is a good idea for boys to read this book as well. Mm. And Dr. Ranj has brought out a book that is a similar type of book for boys. So the book covers consent. It talks about what consent is. It talks about actually, you know, what is sex, what is oral sex, what is anal sex. I mean, it's all in there, but hopefully it's written in a way, it's the best way it possibly can, in that it's honest, but it's not scary and it's reassuring. But it also talks about actually, you know, if you are later on, talks about the fact that it's illegal to have sex before the age of 16 as well. But it does sort of talk about if, you know, later on when you do start thinking about that type of thing, these are, well, a lot about relationships. These are the signs that a relationship is a good relationship. Mm. These are the signs that a relationship is perhaps not a good relationship and things to be wary of.
What chapter is that, by the way?
Yes.
We're
going to read it to you in the van.
Because I think what it does, you know, it's giving all that information, because I think we would be naive to think that 10-year-olds, for example, can't access information on this type of stuff, and they're not talking about it. We know that they are. So, yeah, I think the aim of the book is to just include everything, but in a way that gets girls to, I guess, understand it from the viewpoint of how to best keep themselves safe, maintain their own dignity, self-respect, and to love themselves and to believe that, you know, I think believe in themselves. And I share a few snippets of, I call them overshare moments. And I talk about in the consent bit, I give an example of something that I experienced when I was about 15. So it was a friend who I'd started dating. We'd gone to the cinema and he snuck in some booze. And then when I went to the toilet, came in and got a bit heavy. And how I dealt with that, I dealt with it by telling him to get off. And, you know, he sort of joked around and like, and eventually I said, that screamed, get off, and I mean it sort of thing, and he did. But I know a lot of my friends, and I'm sure you both know people who have been in those situations and thought, it's actually easy to just go along with it.
Yeah, or he'll dump me, or, you know, he'll say something, you know, the whole bullying culture as well. Like, I'm going to say, or I'll make something up about you,
yes,
and you can't disprove
exactly.
it.
Yeah. And I think girls now are growing up in a world where they won't put up with that. I really hope. So anyway, I spell it all out in the book, and it's like, basically, the bottom line is, unless you are thinking and saying in your head, yes, 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 it's a no, no, no.
There's so many images through social media and influencers and also that sense of self-identity.
Yeah.
Which and Ellie and I have talked about this a lot. I didn't feel I had to define myself when I was 13 or 14. But, great, you know, now that I have teenagers, you know, there's so many subsections and labels that they can have. And it's like, you're this or you're that. It's not just, we're all girls, we're not all this or whatever. And, you know, and they can be very empowering, of course, but I think there's a lot of pressure on that we didn't have around that as well.
Definitely. And I think there's a section on the book about filters and using filters and social media. And because I know a lot of young people now, they almost have an alias. They portray themselves as something that they're not. And obviously the danger of that is you don't necessarily have a lot of love and affection for who you really, really are. are. And if you do meet somebody and, you know, you become, they're going to get to know the real you eventually. So yeah. The power of loving yourself. And it reminds me of this little troll. So I do this activity in the book where I get them. It's all about the inner critic and that voice in your head that tells you you're not good enough, not strong enough, not smart enough. So the activity I do around that is that I get them to draw a picture of a troll, of their little troll that's on their shoulders telling them they can't. And the message is, you know, be kind to your troll. Your troll's there to protect you, really. It's there to keep you safe, stop you embarrassing yourself, or stop you doing things that you maybe aren't ready for yet, but your troll can be really oversensitive. So just I get them to visualize themselves saying, it's all right, troll, I got this, and like zipping up its mouth and little like things that I've started kind of doing myself a little bit, imagining that. The little troll.
One of the things you're an amazing champion of is obviously sport and fitness and health. And I wanted to talk to you about that, about getting girls more into sport more, because I mean, I would do anything, you know, to avoid PE. And I mean, I did love being outdoors, but as soon as my body started to change, my boobs got bigger and, you know, I became aware of that. But so how do we talk to both girls and boys about getting into sport? Because I think people can feel really overwhelmed. Oh, I'm not good at it straight away, so I'll just quit or whatever.
Yeah, and especially girls, actually. The statistics say that between the ages of 9 and 12, something like 23% of girls are active enough for good health, doing 60 minutes a day, so it's already pretty low. But from the ages of 13 to 15, it drops to 9%.
Wow, okay.
So it's really low, and I mean, you don't see that drop off in boys. So I've done quite a bit of work going into schools with girls of that age group to find out why. It's always the same things that come up. They basically don't want to be near the boys. They don't want to wear the specified PE kit. A lot of schools are getting better, I think, at that. And they don't necessarily want to do organised sports. So a couple of examples. We worked with a school out in Essex and we said to them, what would you like to do? And they said, basically, we've got an hour for PE, and what ends up happening is we get changed. We stand around being told what to do, given instructions. We don't do it because we don't want to. And then we don't want to mess up our hair and we don't want to mess up our makeup. So we just don't get involved. So we said, well, what would you do? And they said, well, if the teachers would just put a screen up and put Joe Wicks on, a 20-minute workout, we'd do that, get sweaty, actually get some proper exercise. And then we've got half an hour to go and do our makeup and do our hair. And we're quite happy with that. Which sounds like a no-brainer. But of course, schools have then got to tick off their list that a child can stand on one foot and roll the ball along the floor and all those types of things. So it's tricky. And in that school, it was in a deprived part of Essex, but they had this incredible brand new building and an incredible like state-of-the-art gym. So we were there and we were doing co-creation with them around what physical activity they were participating. And I said to them, what would it take for you to use that gym? And they said, well, if the boys weren't there, we would use it. So it would have to be after school when everyone's gone home and no boys. So the teacher sort of looked at them and said, oh, well, we could do that one day a week. They were like, yeah. What day? They said Thursday. She's like, done. Simple as that.
Wow.
So I think
just listening.
I think that's often the key when it comes to engaging children and young people in sport and physical activity, is give them a bit of autonomy. Because whilst we see this massive drop off in girls being physically active, something like the surveys say something like 90% of them do want to be more active.
Interesting.
So it's just finding out what they want to do and helping them to. Enabling them, I guess.
I would say that is a key part of my parenting strategy generally, and has been for many years, is to make them think they have a choice and some power. Even if they don't. But these are all tricky. I mean, you've got a teenage daughter. Are you having these tricky chats already?
Yeah, it is hard. And it's also when you know something's up. Like, I know when like her behaviour changes, or she's a bit snotty to her younger brother. And I thought, that's not because she's angry with her younger brother. That's because something's going on. Mm. And that's usually, I have to find a time where, you know, the younger one's gone to bed, and I'll just sit and go, all right, let's have a little chat. And then sometimes we'll talk about other things, and then it eventually comes around to what it is really about.
Yeah.
And so that's hard. And it's hard to be available because, you know, I'm a single parent, so they'll go to their dad's house a couple of days a week and come back. And so I'm always sort of catching up on things. And that can be really difficult.
Yeah.
But also it's about saying no as well. Like I want to be like, especially when I first got separated, I'd be like, oh, anything you want. Yes, of course, blah, 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 blah. But now it's about sort of saying, no, you can't do that. Or, you know, I'm telling you no because of these reasons.
Yeah.
And that's hard. And that's conflict, which is really difficult.
Oh, hang on. There's a bit in the book that covers exactly that. Right. Nerve's going to need to buy this book because I'm just going to read it all out to you. But it is about conflict with parents. Shall I read to you what my advice is for the girl? Well, it's for them rather than for you guys. But right. So throughout the book, there are these little Dr. Zoe's prescriptions. And this is the one as to how to form a better argument with your parents. It says, write down three reasons why you should be allowed to do whatever it is you've been arguing about. For example, having a sleepover, a friend's house on a school night. Then put yourself in your parents' point of view and write down three reasons why they might not want you to. Then, when you're feeling calm, tell them why you understand their reasoning, but put forward the reasons you think you should be allowed. This will show them you're considering both sides of the argument and trying to find a resolution. They still might not agree, but will appreciate you being mature about it and might be more relaxed next time you ask. Does that sound good?
That's powerful. Just going to pray that to my children when they get home.
So if your 14-year-old came and said, been thinking about it, Mum, and I understand the reasons why you don't want me to blah blah blah,
these are
really good reasons why, these are the reasons why I could, now can I? You'd be like, no. They'll be like, okay, but next time you ask me to pierce something, I might say yes.
Oh, excellent. Because how old are your kids, Zoe?
So I've just got one, he's about to be two.
Yeah, so you've got all this to come.
I've got all this to come. And actually I have to say, writing this from a point of view as a woman who was once a preteen and a doctor, I think reasonably all right, but I don't think I'd be able to write it. If I had a teenage daughter right now, I don't think I'd be able to write it.
Mm.
I think I'd find it really, really difficult.
Yeah, it's emotional because you know, with every stage of parenting, you're always putting yourself in their shoes and you're getting triggered by your own experience.
Yes.
So, you know, when my daughter comes to me about, you know, physical changes and things like that, I said, look, I understand. And she's like, yeah, I'm like, I kind of can, but you know, obviously my lived experience was very different.
Yes.
So
yeah,
it's hard to not to be patronizing, but understanding, empathetic, and then, you know, not too heavy handed. Parenting's hard in a nutshell.
It is. And I hope this helps. You can just give her the book now and say, what? Your boobs are sore? Oh, have a read of this.
Yes, exactly right. And I wanted to go back to your experience growing up, because I think it'd be really interesting hearing how you basically got here today. So what were you... Were you an active child? Did you have a good self-worth? Who was young Zoe?
Oh, God, little Zoe. Very different, I think, to what you see in front of you right now. So my parents divorced when I was quite little. I was five. So my mum had me and my brother. I had really severe asthma, so I was in hospital quite a bit with that and missed quite a bit of school. And I was the only black kid in my school as well. So me and my brother went to a Church of England school. So he was 3 years above me. So we were the only non-white children in that school. And then when I went to secondary school, I went to a different school to him. And it was predominantly white. There's quite a large Pakistani community. So I think one in three children roughly were Pakistani. And then there was me. So I always felt different. And, you know, therefore, I think this fed into a lot of my wanting to please others, and I was, you know, I did quite well with it. I was, you know, quite sporty and top set, and I was sort of friends with every friendship group. I was friends with the jocks, I was friends with the swats, but I was also friends with the kids who were sneaking out and having a cigarette behind the bike shed. So I managed to entangle myself within every group, but I think at the expense of never really being my real self, just trying to fit in. So I would say I definitely lacked confidence. I was really, really shy. And we struggled. We really struggled financially as well. So, you know, free school meals and free school uniforms. And there were once or twice we used a food bank when Mum was really struggling as well. So quite a tricky upbringing in lots of ways. And the worst thing about it was my parents were not particularly kind to each other with others. So for years there were battles, court battles, social workers, all that sort of stuff going on. But I always wanted to be a doctor. And
did you always, yeah, that was it, that's what I'm going to do?
From the age of three. So my Jamaican grandma, who came to the UK from Jamaica way before I was born, when my dad was about eight, she trained to be a midwife in the UK and ended up running the community midwifery service. And, you know, all the Jamaican side of my family were always really, really proud of her. And, you know, she became well respected in our community as a black woman. So that really inspired me. And I think having asthma myself, the doctors that looked after me were always brilliant. I actually quite enjoyed being in hospital when I was in hospital. So that helped. But yeah, from the age of three, I said I'd be a doctor, and definitely didn't take the usual route. So when I was at school, when I was doing my, options in year nine, the teachers were sort of saying I couldn't decide what to do. And they were like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I wanted to be a doctor. And at my school, it was kind of a pat on the back. That's really cute. Right. Isn't that lovely? Yeah. But you need to come up with some more realistic goals. So they got me to do psychometric tests and all sorts of things. And I was basically told that, you know, I wouldn't be a doctor. It was quite a deprived community that I grew up in. And to be honest, I think more people left school early because they were pregnant than went on to university, perhaps. So I think, you know, their intentions weren't bad. They were perhaps, they believed that I wouldn't be a doctor, but, you know, that in the book it goes on about my little mantra, which is yes I can, and how we should all be told yes you can.
So does it say like, fuck you, this teacher, read this you dickhead, I'm a doctor.
My mantra is yes I can, but I don't want to.
But there was one with my PE teacher, Miss Dykes. She's actually mentioned in the little bit at the beginning, because she was the one who literally, she was broad Scottish accent, and I used to compete for school, and she'd stand there on the start line going, yes you can, Zoe. So finished school, did my A levels, completely flunked my A levels because there was a lot of mad stuff going on at home. So I left home when I was 17 and was working in a nightclub 4 days a week. And yeah, so A level results were BCE. So that was kind of like medical school's not going to happen. So I went to live in Tenerife for a year, then worked as a landscape gardener, then went to live in Ayia Napa. And it was whilst I was in Ayia Napa, I was like, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to find a way. It's kind of that Ayia Napa cured me, basically, of my lack of self-belief.
Sure, lots of epiphanies happened in Ayia Napa at that time,
many,
Zoe.
Many epiphanies. Many epiphanies.
I want to be this.
Some would say I became delusional, but turns out aiming high. So came back, started worked as an auxiliary nurse, and figured out I need to go and study another degree to then be able to get into medical school. So went to Newcastle to study biomedical sciences. And then a few months into that, they came into the lecture theatre. There were 350 of us on this same course. Well, on the biomedical sciences courses, there were about 8 different degrees, but we all had the same first year. And this guy came into the lecture theatre and he said, we recognise there are people in this room that want to do medicine, that would make great doctors, but for whatever reason, haven't got the grades, haven't passed the interview, we're going to give you a second chance. They said, we're going to allow 12 people from this room.
Stop, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry.
Up to 12 people from this room to go back into first year next year, but to study medicine.
Oh, my God.
So I thought, this is my chance. So I did an essay application. They interviewed... it was six people. They interviewed 12 for the 6 places. Two of us passed the interview, me and a girl called Ali, but that was conditional on getting, we had to get basically a first in all the 8 modules throughout the course of the year.
What a first year, Jesus. You actually can study.
I know.
Also, you can look at people's baruchas. I mean, I think the advanced entry is too high.
And poor Ali got 68% in her genetics module. So they said, so it was just me. So that's how I got into medicine. I basically wrangled my way in. And and in the book I say, look, the harder the struggle is to get to the start line, the easier the race is. Because I'd had to work so hard to get into medicine, I actually found it all right.
God. And then you became obviously a doctor, and then you ended up being this morning's Dr. Zoe Williams.
Unbelievable.
But Dr. Zoe, all right, blah blah blah, very impressive, blah blah, I'm a doctor, blah blah blah, yeah. Can we talk about your real achievement, your real career achievement? Were you or were you not a gladiator?
Woo!
Like a Roman one, like one off the television programme.
I was Gladiator ready.
Yes, amazing.
I was, and I still, When I talk about this, I still sometimes think, did that really happen?
Do you like talking about it, or is it annoying?
I love talking about it.
Okay, great, brilliant.
I love talking about it. It was amazing.
Oh, because I read that you auditioned to be a contender.
Yes.
You were ready, and then they picked you out and they said, no, you could be a gladiator, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, because I wasn't even going to apply. Gladiators came back on TV, and at the end of the first series, they said, we're looking for contestants. And it was my mate Shawzy, Joe Shaw, who was a rugby player, rang me up and said, you've got to apply, go on Gladiators, win it, you'll win 10 grand. And I was like, oh, well, but, you know, I've just become a doctor. It's sort of a year into being a doctor. What will people think? He's like, Zoe, how much is your student loan? I was like, yeah. So that was my aim, to go on and be a contender and win 10 grand. And yeah, I went to the audition and they asked me to come back the following week and audition to be a gladiator. And I became Amazon, which yes! I can't quite believe myself.
Your special skill was delivering things the very next day. Well, I'm surprised they didn't give you a medical name like Suture or something. Like
the injector.
Yes.
Aspirin.
The scalpel. Yes. Did you get to choose your name, or did they choose Amazon for you?
Oh, so they chose it, but I thought I chose it, because when we all got together, all the gladiators, and me and Amy, who were the new gladiators, and Wayne, and because when we were doing all the workshops, we couldn't be Amy and Zoe and Wayne, we had to have fake gladiator names. They said, just give yourselves a name, doesn't matter what it is, for the purposes of this workshop. And I called myself Amazon. So I always thought that I chose it and they liked it, but apparently, yeah, just purely coincidental, the big execs at Sky had actually, separately to that, decided I should be Amazon, because it was the year that Sky were going green, so I also got to be the green gladiator, which was great. So I got to go up to their offices in Isleworth and up in Scotland and walk around in a special green costume and tell them to use their recycling bin. Turn off lights when you go home.
Amazing. Was it, because when you see it on the tip, as a kid watching Gladiators, obviously it looked amazing and the gladiators were like superheroes and it looked really serious. But when you look at it now, I'm like, that looks like a laugh. Were you all partying and shagging each other behind the scenes?
No, no, no. We were actually, we were all quite serious, right. I think.
Because you have to be a proper athlete, right, to do it.
Yeah, that's right. Because people often would say, you know, how did they train you and get you in shape? It's like, well, no, they didn't. We were trained and in shape, and actually once you start filming and recording, because they're super long days in studio, and once you've got your makeup done you can't barely do anything, and you've got your costume on all day, so we actually our physical aesthetic sort of declined as we go through the series. So the guys all got a bit skinnier and the girls all got a little bit bigger, but yeah, no, they were all pretty serious athletes, and there weren't many of us. There were only four of us that were single, and so no, there was genuinely none of that.
What was your favourite event?
Powerball, because it was just
that was a big rugby player.
So Powerball's the one where they've got the five pods and they've got to run from the behind their little line and get the balls in, and you could just rugby tackle them. So because I was a rugby player, that was my sport. So that was just fun. You just got used to, and they wanted you to make it dramatic as well. So if you could pick up a leg and like fling them through the air and smash them down a bit heavy, but without hurting them, then even better. You sort of had license to be dramatic with it, or pull them around a few times.
Oh,
I loved
yes.
it. Controlled aggression.
I love
my vibe.
I still think we should bring it back for middle age, but we did a sketch once. Do you remember when I was pregnant? We did a Gladiators sketch and Pete did the voiceover. And what was I? Was I vulva?
You were vulva. Yeah, I can't remember what I was called. But yeah, you were about 5 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And then we fudged it, so I lost. And they said, punishment is you've got to do 10 jumps on the mini trampoline. And like, I was a lot bigger then. And my boobs were just like bouncing. And then I had to try not to do a wee. So anyway, I think
it was a very highbrow.
We can bring it back. We can bring it back. But
you know, Gladiators is coming back this year.
I know. I'm thinking of applying. Are you interested in getting involved again?
Well, no, I don't think so. I'm
too
busy
with you.
I think I would wee myself, actually, if I tried to play Powerball now.
Thank goodness we've answered the question that I really wanted to ask, apart from about Helen's farts. Now you're here. I mean, the book's marvellous, but Gladiators. Should we have some scummy mummy confessions?
Yes. This is where we share a story of parenting failure or personal failure, which is usually my thing. Should I start?
Go for it.
You'll be surprised to hear it's a fart-based fart-based one. So I don't like to mention it, but I ran a marathon on Sunday.
Yay! Well done.
Thanks, man.
That's a Danish one, wasn't it? This time?
Yes, I did Copenhagen on Sunday, and I've been training for it 3 or 4 times a week. Was aiming for sub-4 last year. I did a 4:15. I was like, right,
wow,
absolutely,
that's amazing.
You know, I did a 24-minute 5K. I was like, I'm fast.
Like a whippet, Zoe.
Yeah,
she's off she goes.
I'm impressed.
But then on Tuesday night, beforehand, I went for my final sprints and I fucked my calf. Left off and I strained it and I thought I'd torn it. But anyway, so I limped. Anyway, I was like, all right, I'm just going to try and do the marathon. So I did it in 4:15. Fine. Was perfect. Same time as I did before.
Were you aiming for under 4?
Yeah.
Were you?
But I sort of thought, well, I'm injured. That's not a bad thing.
That's amazing.
Anyway, I did run next to the guy who ran the entire marathon with a pineapple on his head. that was a highlight. So I ran.
Agatha too.
Yeah.
Isn't that a sign of something, a pineapple?
Don't know. Upside don't know the symbolism, pineapple. But...
Oh.
Something, yeah. I think swingers. Do swingers have a...
Are you thinking of pampas grass?
Yes, but they do pineapples as well. Pineapple in the trolley. I think so.
Pineapple in the trolley?
I'm walking around the supermarket and there's a pineapple. I think it has to be upside down. I mean, I might be just getting it
wrong. Swingers meet each other in fucking supermarkets now. Jesus, they're everywhere.
Oh, no, you can't move them.
Oh, calm down, honestly. I'm frightened to shop for tropical fruit now.
Sex people, then.
What message I'm sending? Sex people.
God. Oh dear.
Sex people are so dull. Anyway.
Sorry, Helen.
No, it's fine. Anyway, my scummy version is that I overvassed my bum. And so when I was farting, it was very flappy and very, very, very squidgy.
Oh.
I was just very noisy. In a
greasy.
Very, yeah, really unpleasant. Like, I way over lubed my bum.
Which bit of your bum are you lubing? I don't know. I thought you lubed in between your thighs.
No,
I
over lubed my crack and it was highly unpleasant. It was like sitting in jelly for 4 hours.
Were you farting as well?
Yes, I'm barely farting when I run. And it was really noisy and really wet.
And smelly.
Like doing it in a trifle.
Yes, I know.
Terrible.
Unbelievable. But she was great at the end. Clean bill of health down there. Like, but very, I wouldn't, I think you can be too lubricated. That's that's my take home. When I write my book, Marathon.
I love it.
Yes, anyway, that was a long story.
Oh, amazing.
With a humble brag in the middle.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a confession or if it's just something I'd like to... It sort of is a confession. I'd like to confess to you, Dr. Zoe Williams, that we've been using a biological term incorrectly. So
sorry.
You know what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
So... We do this Scummy Mummies live comedy show, and last week we did 3 nights in Twickenham. Brilliant audiences, world's best techs, LB and Meg, really great time. And on the last night, we come out in the second half dressed in sort of big pink vagina cat suits, twat suits for shorthand. They've got big hoods and pubes and like it's all... And we
they're
do
glittery
lots of,
and they're wonderful. Yeah.
And we do lots of silly jokes. And I would think I was saying the silly joke about they're modelled on our own vaginas, but my real vagina isn't this tight and shiny. And we had this moment...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Just the worst heckle, the most unusual heckle we've ever had, where this woman, about four rows up, just went, "It's vulva, not vagina."
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
But here's the thing, if I would not say,
exactly right.
You did not interrupt my story to say that, because you understood that I was building to a comedic point. So you allow me to finish my fucking story that was in the middle. So I'm afraid we did royally take the piss out of it.
Oh, for the next 45 minutes.
Your fun at dinner party. Yes, yeah. So I want to say that, of course, that woman is correct. That's why I'm confessing. We do incorrectly in the show use that term. And you know, she is right. However, fuck off. Could you at least wait till the punchline? I found it very annoying. Now, to be fair to her, afterwards she did come to see it. Well, she'd lost her phone, so she had to come back in the theatre, and it was all a bit awkward because we were tidying up. And she did say she worked for a gynecological cancer charity,
right.
And that's why it's important to her to get the terminology right, which I totally can see her point, and that's a good argument.
I'm sure it made the show much more entertaining.
Oh, people loved it.
I'll give her a great story to bring up at dinner parties and educate everyone in while she's doing it about the difference between a vagina and a vulva.
Fucking hell, that night it was a raucous night.
Yeah.
But that night we'd already had an American lady who was incredibly drunk and didn't get a lot of the references in the show, which I'm sorry, I understand, but I don't really have time to explain all of the references in the show. So she came like turning to her mate like really loudly and going like, "What is Grange Hill? What is dogging? Google it. Shut up. Google it later." So I've done all that, and then my favourite bit though was in the second half, because it's not really a stage in Twickenham, it's all there, and this lady kicked Prosecco all over the stage, and so we had to and then I looked down and she was embarrassed and she was trying to mop it up, and I was like, "What are you mopping that up with?" And I picked it up and she pulled a baby's vest out of her handbag. Which was a very sweet and valiant effort.
At least it wasn't knickers, which I did on a train recently. That was embarrassing. I was trying to find my charger on a train and just dug in my bag and pulled out a clean pair of knickers.
Were they sexy pants or Sunday pants?
No, they were Sunday pants.
love it.
Shove and those straight back in.
Do you have a scummy mummy confession?
Confession? So our child's obsessed with balls. He loves rugby balls, footballs, basketballs. Like, it just often he's just like ball.
I think you'll find they're called testicles.
Use the correct name, please.
Spheres.
But it is, he's like
scrotum.
Yeah. Ball obsessed. So we always have to take one. You know, like most kids go to bed with a teddy bear. He likes to choose a ball to take to bed with him. So, and he says ball. You know, sometimes it is annoying, isn't it, when you've got this child constantly going ball. You can probably guess what's coming. So with my partner plays rough with him all the time, as they do, as men tend to. And I'm always saying, "Don't do that, you'll hurt him, don't do this, you'll hurt him." So I just sort of kicked a soft ball, luckily, kicked this ball across towards Lisbon. I hit him straight in the face, knocked him over. My partner was like, "You can never shout at me again."
I hate that.
It's awful. Feeling.
Because my husband, we call him Mr. Health and Safety, don't we? He's always so worried about everything. Whereas I'm just like I'm going to, it's a bonus confession. One of my children's favourite games to play with me is hit us with clothes. Because often when I'm putting the laundry away upstairs, I put it out on the bed and I'm folding it, and they like to come and jump on the bed, and I get annoyed with them, and I sort of I'm not literally like punishing them with clothes. But it's slightly embarrassing when you're, for example, in the supermarket and you go, "And when we get home, I've got to put some laundry away so you can have a bit of telly," and they go, no, hit us with clothes. Slightly awkward. Anyway, well, there we go. So your excellent book, You Grow Girl, is out.
Yeah, 8th of June. Yeah.
Go and buy it.
And the audiobook is out as well. Yeah.
No, it's wonderful. And thank you for all the work you do. You're an amazing advocate for women's health. And you're just a great person.
And you're a gladiator. That's the most impressive thing, let's just be honest.
Can we all just go on the trampoline after this?
I'm going to hit you with a giant cotton bud. Or just some clothes.
Yes, just clothes. Hit him with clothes.
Excellent. Some brief admin. As always, we're on tour all of the time. We're having a little break in August, so if you want to, and September, so if you want to come and see us. But we're booking now for our autumn tour and even our Christmas tour, aren't we, Helen?
Yeah, 2024. We're going to be all over the place. We're doing some big shows in Cambridge and Bristol and Horsham. All sorts of places, Elliot.
Horsham.
Yep.
Horsham.
Come here, boy. Three nights in Horsham. And we've got some big Christmas shows. And can we announce Cat Finelli?
I mean, what are they going to do if we do?
All right, we're doing Catford.
Catford.
You can come along, Dr. Zoe.
Yes.
I'd love to. Yeah.
Which is, of course, my very favourite gig because I can walk there. So that's.
And
so, is that December? I don't think tickets are on sale yet.
But, no, they will be soon. And this time, I promise I won't get so drunk that I eat your husband's kebab. Not a euphemism.
Still embarrassed.
And I think that's it. Is there anything else you want to plug, or where can people follow you, Zoe, or anything like that?
Do you know what? There is actually something else I'll plug.
Here we go.
Here's the list. No, just one thing. I've actually just recorded my first podcast. My podcast. And that's also about to come out very, very soon. So it's called The Doctor Will Hear You Now.
Oh. See what you've done there. See what I've done there.
That's
so awesome. What's the concept?
So the concept is basically me as a doctor not being the expert, but a person who's had a lived experience of a condition, and we tend to go with conditions that have got a lot of stigma and misinformation around them, being the expert and me learning sort of about their lived experience. So the aim of it really is to things like menopause, bowel cancer, dementia, depression, to shine a light on what it's like to live with that condition in the hope that we can all be a bit more empathetic and understanding. But there'll be famous people who are affected by those conditions.
Yeah, people whose farts are incredibly stinky.
Yeah. We
could have that one for Sydney.
Listen, it's a condition many of us suffer with. Some of us who don't even have it. The suffering is still very real.
Sorry. I feel quite lucky, but also I feel like I'm missing out because I haven't experienced one of Helen's farts.
I'll catch one in a jar for you.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a thing, like a Shazam for your phone, but there's an app that would be like, something's actually wrong. Because you can't dipstick it. Oh, no, I have to send my shit in a jar, don't I?
Shit in a jar.
That was that
in a hammock. Oh, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Dr. Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Until next time. I slapped my thigh then.
God.
Until next time. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.
That's incredible. Femfresh, didn't we get asked to do an advert for it once?
Yeah.
Tell the people of Britain their vaginas are stinky and need special bleach.
As well as their asses.
Very much so, I know. There's no arse fresh. I'd buy that. That'd be fine. There's a thing on social media today about men are not very good at wiping their bottoms.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I could have told you that. I see enough of them.
Yeah, gosh.
Oh, no. You have to look at men's arseholes.
I think most of them do make an extra special effort to give it a clean when they know they're going to get a finger in their arse. But
yeah, it's like when you go for a wax, you make sure it's all, you know... You don't have to film.
Do you have it? Is it like when the cleaner comes around, you have a tidy up first?
Yeah. Like a pre-tardy of the bush.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer.
Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.